always an outcry that women, there's no promotion of the rights of women and their participation and so on. In our case, there are four women absent. Of course, Baba Mfundisi is now replaced Mama Dichitelo. So three women upset. But I'm not complaining, because the meeting will proceed with this business. Today we've got a lengthy agenda. We have to receive the responses from the state law advisors. We are going to receive the response from the department. We're also going to have a response from the parliamentary legal advisor on the opinion that we received from the senior counsel on the bill. We have agreed with the parliamentary advisor to make a statement instead of reading the whole opinion, because the department and the state law advisor will respond and explain their position. Secondly, we are going to adopt the strategic plan of the portfolio committee. We are going to adopt the minutes. We are also going to have agree on the process forward on the bill beyond this point. Is there a matter that is missing, Pumla? Apologies. Honourable members, do you have anything that you would need to add to the agenda? Nothing. Thank you very much. Can we now get Pumla to give us the apologies? Enough about my complaint about the absence of women.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members and my colleagues. I only have one apology from Prince Zulu. He's sick. Thank you.
Another apology from the ministry.
We apologize also for the Director General, who is away on official business at the moment in Zambia. And Minister and DM are also at the House at the moment.
They are
working
meeting at the moment.
Chair. I put the apologies. Agreed? Thank you very much. Can we move on? The lawyers are going to decide who shoots first. They will stand in a queue as they choose. Over to you.
Chair, I must just restate that I'm not. I thought the state law advisor should start, but we are agreeing that I should start for the department as opposed to the state law advisors.
What?
No. I imagine that when you refer to lawyers, you are talking about the state law advisors or the parliamentary legal advisors. But I speak for the department, not as a lawyer.
The same gentleman, last time we were here, she says we've got a response, we're going to respond to this opinion. Today he says, I don't speak as a lawyer. All we need are the responses, that's all. So that's why I said, you decide who shoots first.
Chair, I will attempt to go through what the state law advisors I've written formally, and then our additional comments within this, and then it will be supplemented by my colleague here. With respect to the opinion by senior counsel, there are quite a number of areas, and I will not be...
Excuse me. Excuse me. I've abantu basisikebi, they will remember that what was Pagama Piki back born.
So we're saying that if the bill or aspects of the bill are found not to be necessary within the
scope of Section 44(2) of the Constitution, it still has to be determined whether the whole legislative scheme fails or some aspects of the bill. The Council relied heavily on the liquor bill judgment. Even in that judgment, the Constitutional Court separated the bill into three aspects. The court in that liquor bill said two aspects of this bill are truly matters that require national intervention. Only one aspect failed in that liquor judgment bill. So we are at a bit of a loss that Council did not really assist us so much in saying, one, which aspects of this bill truly fails, truly encroaches on provincial competence, and which provincial competence is that which falls within Schedule 5. And we're saying this because there is also another difficulty that is presented by the opinion. Chair, committee, it's important to separate the question of competence of Parliament to make a law in terms of Section 72 as opposed to the question of the conflict. Because we first need to address whether this Parliament can actually legislate on those subjects. And it goes to the answer of whether it's a Schedule 4 or Schedule 5 kind of a piece of legislation. Hence, we're saying that the opinion did not assist us on the competence and the conflict issue. Because even if we need to address competence first. And our view is that this Parliament competently can do 44(2). To the extent that the opinion did not address even what are those conflict, what are those areas where we encroach, where we could not understand those matters. Chair, one can cite, I think just not to take too much time, because one of the things we want to state up front is that Section 44(2) is so distinct from 155(7) because 44(2) talks about provincial competence. 155(7) speaks to municipal competence. The examples the Senior Council has given and writes through quite a lot of those sections, paragraphs in his opinion, to suggest that this bill is not necessary and as such it doesn't fall within Section 44(2) are actually matters which are of municipal planning in nature. So what we're saying is that the evidence of what amounts to municipal planning and what probably could be offensive cannot be offending 44(2). It could only offend 155(7). And resolving if a matter offends 155(7) is very easy. If a national law conflicts with a municipal bylaw, the national law prevails. So we're just saying that he has used, with all respect, inappropriate instances or examples to justify a certainly different conclusion. But I will refer back to that. I think what is probably quite difficult for us also is what is contained in paragraph 30 through to paragraph 47 of the opinion. Chair, if we look at paragraph 30 to 47 of the opinion of the Senior Council, in an attempt to find the basis for what is necessary in terms of Section 44(2) of the Constitution, the opinion seems predicated on the assumption that once we propose a differentiated or a varying approach, once you say that a municipal planning tribunal may decide the matter, or in certain instances an official may do it, it becomes not necessary. We couldn't find authority for that proposition in the legal judgment or in the Constitution itself. What one is saying is that Council seems to have conflated what is different and necessary, and the argument is almost saying that once something is different, it irreconcilably results into a legal inconsistency. When the province of KwaZulu-Natal attempted to make a constitution, and they sent the constitution to the Constitutional Court for certification, in that case which we can offer the committee, one of the things that came very clearly, there are paragraphs in that judgment that directly address this question. In fact, the interim constitution, Section 160, paragraph 3 of the interim constitution, especially made provision to say that a provincial constitution may provide for different structures and institutions separate from the national one. Yet, it is not inconsistent. What we're saying here is that the argument of Senior Council is so, right through a lot of paragraphs, was saying that once you create a difference, and it started the bill, so once there's something different, it naturally is inconsistent. And we're saying that in the case of the certification judgment, the court addressed that very eloquently. In fact, the full court in that judgment, Chair, even went further to say that where two laws provide for two different systems and you can comply with both, that the only time you reach inconsistency is when compliance with one leads you to disobedience with the other one. And that's the only time you find legal inconsistency. So we have a lot of difficulty in agreeing that because we said provinces could have different systems, it necessarily leads to inconsistency. We can make this available further, but we all say that in respect of those areas from paragraph 30 to 47, the court bill judgment that the council refers to could just be read in context of other provisions. But maybe lastly on that point, section 155(6) sub 4 of the constitution is the only one that deals with the inconsistency between a national law and a municipal planning matter, not 144(2). Quickly on paragraphs 48 to 62 of the opinion of senior counsel, Chair, what we would love the committee to consider is the fact that planning or the nature of the bill that comes before this honorable committee happens at different scales, and they happen in almost a concentric circle. They do not happen on different parallels, as if you finish one, you do one. They happen inside of each other. We all plan on the same piece of land. So you cannot achieve a definition of municipal planning that creates almost an hermetically sealed line between municipal planning and provincial planning. They are normally related. So the definition that we've provided is one that recognizes that interaction, that interdependency, and that robust relationship between municipal planning, provincial planning, and national planning. So when council then said in paragraph 60 and paragraph 61 of things that that the definition is unhelpful, it is indeed a challenge to say that you cannot have municipal planning that at some point will not interact with provincial planning. Hence, we're saying that the scale, the intensity, and those are the kind of words the bill has used, will necessarily guide us. Indeed, in the Constitutional Court judgments, in the Starwood judgment, which was on the assembly of 1970, and the DFA judgment itself, and the Lagoon Bay judgment of the High Court of Western Cape that Senior Counsel referred to, that was the case where a municipality took a decision here, and the MEC attempted to do something, and the court expressly recognized the fact that both provincial planning and municipal planning, the court was that, gave one instance to say maybe when it crosses the boundary of one municipality, it may necessarily implicate provincial planning. But all we're saying is that we would love to be assisted by the Senior Council to give us those possible definitions of how you can define municipal planning as to insulate totally from provincial planning. Our experience and experience of practitioners is such that they are so, it's almost a near impossibility, Chair, to have. Chair, quickly on paragraph 63 to 86 of the opinion, the Senior Council has argued that to the extent that development principles may be interpreted differently by those to whom these principles apply, the purpose of section 44(2) of the Constitution is defeated. Chair, the Senior Council also said that matters such as desirable settlement patterns, rural revitalization, urban generation, I think he meant urban regeneration, the administrative processes for these, a framework for desired land use pattern, that these are all matters of provincial or local spheres of government. Those are not what we read from the schedules to the Constitution. Schedules 4 and 5, both the one that allows concurrency and the exclusive one, did not limit many of these. Indeed, most of these things that the Senior Council has alluded to are things that will be done within urban and regional development, are things that will be done in rural development, are things that will be done in economic development. And these are not exclusive preserve of any of the spheres. So for Council to then say that these matters belong to the provincial or local spheres, as to then say that national government may not manage what is a desirable settlement pattern, runs against the grain of what we know in actual practice and what the Constitution allows us to do. Chair, the opinion also raised the question of consistency to be applied between different frameworks and development principles. Chair, a national special development framework, if we look at Chapter 8 of the National Development Plan, it proposes a national special development framework. In 2003, we at the national level produced the National Special Development Perspective. It was further improved and adopted by Cabinet in 2006 as the National Special Development Perspective. When you look at land use patterns at a national level. You are looking at the broader picture. When you look at it at a provincial level, Western Cape has got a provincial special development framework. Eastern Cape has got one. We just completed one in Northern Cape. We're busy with Free State and Mpumalanga. The reality is that a framework at a national level looks at a wider, broader picture of integration and alignment. Even when we look at the PICC work and the SIPs, and when you look at the special analysis that it's looking at the space economy at a national scale. A province can still do that. They fit into each other, but they're not things that are inherently exclusive. Because in other parts of the opinion, the senior council suggested that you cannot do land use patterns at national level and also do it at provincial level and at central do it at municipal level. Like other forms of planning, you can do planning at different levels, at different institutions, and some of those conclusions reached by senior council are indeed difficult to understand in the absence of further engagement. About the integrative nature of SDFs, Chair, the opinion wondered how you could do all the things you want to do in a municipal SDF. Chair, if only the person who wrote the opinion had looked at how SDF is done in real practice. We've alluded several times, Chair, to guidelines for development of municipal SDFs that we have as a department that guides municipalities. When you do SDFs, you need to look at a range of other sets of plans. Those processes and those disagreements of how it is done, what you need to consider, how you do public participation, we cannot, with respect, write all those things in a piece of legislation. We do not think that the authorities say that we should write a guideline in a piece of legislation. We need to only give empowering provisions. And I would love to be guided further by the committee on whether or not the provisions related to SDFs are indeed sufficient or where they are insufficient, how we can strengthen them. The arguments after paragraph 66 of the opinion then proceeded through 87 to 91. And that's where the council was making the argument, Chair, that the Municipal Systems Act. In fact, the council concluded in one paragraph there that the Municipal Systems Act comprehensively, and that's the word the opinion has used, comprehensively regulates special development frameworks. Chair, except we have a very strange meaning of the word comprehensive. In the Municipal Systems Act, there is only one line, not even a section, not even one part, not even a subsection. There is only one item of Section 26E that mentions the word SDF. There is nothing else in the Section 20, in the Systems Act that deals with SDFs. So one wonders how a single item, a sub-item under a section could by all means mean comprehensive. Then the council went ahead to look at the regulations to the Systems Act as a basis to then say that the Systems Act has dealt with this matter. Those regulations to the Systems Act, where they deal with SDFs, they do not contain more than a page. And that's still comprehensive to council. But what we're saying, Chair, without detracting from the opinion, Chair, is the fact that Section 26E of the Systems Act, it talks about what should be in an IDP. And it lists a couple of things, which council has repeated in his opinion. Chair, in that same opinion, it's alluded that in Section 26 of the Systems Act, in the IDP, you must have a financial plan. The financial plan is fully regulated in the Municipal Finance Management Act. The IDP talks that you must do a disaster management plan. The disaster management is regulated in a totally different piece of legislation. So what we're saying is that all the components of IDPs are actually matters that are fully regulated elsewhere. Because of the fact that it is integrated, it's a vehicle that takes into consideration so many things. You cannot fully regulate it. Systems like that talks about the systems. And the components of it are fully regulated elsewhere. So one is at a loss to understand why, if there is municipal finance management that talks about a component of Section 26 of the Systems Act, if there is a disaster management that talks about a component of it, if there are water services legislation that talks about a component, the transport plan in terms of the National Land the Land Transition Act talks about the transport plan within the IDP, why would the SDF not be fully regulated in another piece of legislation? Without necessarily reaching the conclusion that it is so inconsistent. So Let us strengthen our position. We're saying that the Regulations to the Systems Act itself says that the SDF of a municipality must conform to the development principles in the Development Facilitation Act. Of course, Council was a bit erroneous when it says the Development Facilitation Act has been repealed. It is not repealed yet. Two chapters were declared unconstitutional, but not the chapter on the development principles in the Development Facilitation Act. So what we are saying is that if the Regulations to the Systems Act itself says that you need to develop SDFs in accordance with Chapter 2 of the Development Facilitation Act, and we are through this process proposing that we repeal the Development Facilitation Act, we'll be creating a legal gap. In fact, we are saying that the Systems Act regulations, because of the fact that it recognizes that it is a mandate within the Development Facilitation Act, that's why it's created that way. We are then saying that what the Development Facilitation Act is doing will be done by this bill. So the system that already in itself creates the link with this piece of legislation. Because once we repeal the DFA, we have it replaced with the SLAM or SPLOMA. So we will say then that, Chair, that we also have difficulty with agreeing with the reasoning that the system, because the Council then concluded to say that we the Parliament should either repeal the Systems Act or not have this one. It's not a question of either or. I think the experience of is that to comply with one legal situation, you need to read many pieces of legislation. We all read laws together with each other in order to comply. So multiple compliance is the norm in compliance with legislation, as opposed to say that all the matters to be regulated must be in one piece of legislation. If we apply for high D, we need to comply with the Identification Act, we need to comply with this other act and a couple of things. Birth and Registration Act, it's not one that says that this subject matter is all regulated in one piece of legislation. Chair, running through this, because one could give history.
You only have 2 minutes.
I would. This is pointless. Chair, paragraph 92 to 104 of the opinion. Council made the statement that there are no comparable or there are sometimes multiple provisions for reconciliation of misaligned SDFs across the spheres. Check. Special planning and land use management, there are two related fields, but sometimes distinct. The principal planning tool that we have for special planning is the SDFs. At land use management level, we are proposing the land use scheme. To confirm the Constitutional Court judgment in the DFA case, we are all saying that municipal planning is in respect of rezoning and matters of that nature, subdivision. So we cannot have the same tendencies that the link. There are differences between the SDF. SDF of a municipality is slightly more detailed at a lower level than a provincial SDF. So we cannot then, like council is proposing that we have the same rules totally applicable to SDF at the municipal level, at the provincial level, and at the national level. Because, and with respect, that's the kind of argument that the council is making around aligning this. Because we propose that the minister should determine the procedures for aligning these SDFs across different spheres, across different jurisdictions, council also saw problem with that. The council concluded that will be conflicting with the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. Chair, while Section 41 of the Constitution deals with the IGR matters, and that IGR matter is dealt with in the IGR Framework Act, Chair, there are other pieces of legislation that have dealt with sector-specific intergovernmental relations. Chair, I can give at least three instances. There is another piece of legislation called the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, 97 of 1997. It does exactly that. It determines governmental relations in respect of fiscal matters. So with respect, Council may not be absolutely correct when it then says that if the Minister sets out the processes for reconciling SDFs in this field, it will be conflicting with the intergovernmental relations. In fact, if we look at the Chapter 2 of the bill, we expressly said the Minister should do that. Consistent with the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. So we've already tied ourselves and recognized that broader legislation. We also say that the National Environmental Management Act 107 of 1998, Chair, does exactly that in respect of environmental management. In education, the National Education Policy Act 27 of 1996 does also that. So it cannot be that the IGR bill is an all-encompassing one that then excludes every other form of intergovernmental arrangement. On paragraphs 105 to 110, and I'll try to conclude on that. You spoke about the municipal planning tribunal not complying. I'm running to the end of this. Paragraphs 105 to 110 of the opinion said that there are only two major areas that have that. I've already said that municipal planning tribunal and compliance with municipal special development framework is ideal. A provincial special development framework operates at a slightly different level, so you don't need to tie it to land use compliance. In fact, they are different things. Let me leave that. We can talk. Actually, two last issues. Paragraphs 111 to 123. Council addressed the question of arbitrariness. Council invited us to look at the non-impediment clause in clause 7, and I think 51 of the bill, and possible conflicts with the National Building Regulations and Building Standards Act 103 of 1997. Chair, we've already stated that the policy objective is to deal with quite a number of legacy issues. We cannot then say that not in my backyard principle will be enforced by this legislation. And I think there are parameters to say that if a new order legislation, post-1994 legislation conflicts with the old order 1977 legislation, you look at the source of powers. So we're saying that on the provision in the bill, it will stand constitutional scrutiny. Indeed, we are saying that the National Building Standards and Buildings Regulations itself is what is constitutionally suspect. So it would be not helpful for us to be benchmarking our piece of legislation against a possibly unconstitutional piece of legislation. So we should rather say we tie the 1977 legislation to a post-1994 legislation, not the other way around. And that's our argument on that question of arbitrariness. We will concede and we'll work with the state advisors to see whether we cannot refine the question of powers of inspectors that council has raised, whether or not it's too overreaching. Chair, on the last point, and I'll try to close on this. Chair, there are quite a number of arguments council made around the powers of traditional councils. From paragraphs 124 to 133, through the guidance of this committee, we worked on a version which says that municipal councils should necessarily invite the participation of traditional councils in its affairs when deliberating on matters affecting areas under traditional leadership. If I understand the arguments of council correctly, the council is saying that the Structures Act mentions traditional leaders and not traditional councils. But the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act mentions traditional councils and not traditional leaders. So because of this difference in terminologies between what the System Structures Act says and what the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act says, we cannot rely on that. Chacha, we do not think it is correct. A combined reading of both pieces of legislation gives us a unified view. We are not saying that we derive the authority to say that traditional councils must participate from those legislations. All we are saying is that in a manner consistent with them, and that there is no traditional council without a traditional leader, or something of that sort. So we are saying that a combined reading of Section 81 of the Structures Act with the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act give us the most synchronized view. Chair, the council has used words like it's anomalous. We do not think this is how we read legislations robustly to find inconsistency necessarily. And the last one. It was just, Chair, from paragraphs 134 to 139, I promise you it's the last one, Chair. Council says that we are trying through this bill to extend the reach of municipal planning to areas previously administered by traditional authorities in terms of customary law and practice. So council then saw a conflict with powers of traditional leaders. We have been advised by traditional leaders. We are not setting ourselves on a collision course with institutional traditional leadership. I think council is conflating the respect for customary practice with constitutional powers vested in a sphere of government. Municipal planning is not separate and can be something that can manage out of traditional leadership powers. Indeed, in the Clara judgment, one of the things we lost or we could not convince the court, especially the High Court chair, was the fact that some of the institutions we were proposing in the old Clara sought to create another level separate from, at least that's the argument of errors when they took us to court, that we're trying to create a fourth tier of government. We will not attempt to do that through this rule because we're going to lose chair. So we're saying that what you have rightly led us into to say that we must ensure the participation of traditional councils or traditional leaders in the affairs of municipal council and municipalities is the right course to do. Which then says that in areas of the traditional leaders are given the voice, are given the opportunity to robustly interact with the decision-making process. If we do believe what council is saying, council is literally saying that municipalities in areas of the traditional leadership step off. We cannot do that, Chair. I will leave the rest to you.
Thank you very much. Any member want to raise a question on the response, Fago? Once you left here, I was saying to change it. You will go out so many times because your newfound member needs real extensive management. Out of order. Go ahead, Fag.
Yeah, it's not only my newfound member that needs extensive management. Chair, I believe that this bill needs extensive management. I don't know what happened now this morning because we, as a committee, got an opinion. We sought an opinion. It was put here. There was an undertaking from the department that they were an indication that the department didn't really agree with the opinion and that they would seek opinion of their own, an independent opinion. The state law advisors said they would give us a response by Friday last week. I haven't seen that response. I've had a long report, or we've all had a long report from the sponsor of this legislation. I have no legal response to an opinion that was put in this committee, so I don't know what the status of this response is. Firstly, Chair, the four issues that the department say were raised in this opinion that they wanted to speak to, which the sponsor of the legislation has just spoken to, is encroachment on other spheres of government and other legislation, non-processing of the bill through the National House of Traditional Leaders, issues dealing with transitional arrangements, and then fourthly, exemptions. Chair, Mr. Owen Rombie says, and I quote, senior counsel's opinion is difficult to understand in the absence of further interaction. My question is, what interaction has the department had? Because this is not the place to have interaction with an opinion in the absence of the person who made the opinion. That's not interaction. Secondly, Mr. Owen Rombie refers to the way legislation is read and that multiple compliance is the norm and that no legislation is conclusive. He says that it allows for robustness of reading legislation and legislation is read in concentric fashion rather than linear fashion. So my question, Chair, my second question is, how do we progress with this bill since we've engaged senior counsel and had him represent or present his opinion? Now the opinion is being gainsaid by the department, being represented by Mr. Owen Rombie. And he made a salutary reference to Clara. Clara was a piece of legislation that was processed through Parliament that was found to be not to be able to meet constitutional muster and was declared unconstitutional. Now, the defensiveness with which the presentation has just been made says the opinion is wrong, the department and this legislation is right. And we precisely got an opinion because we believed, if we looked at all the representations made to this committee, that there were potential flaws in this legislation. Now there's a dogged resistance to any interpretation of the legislation as presented. So my third question is, where is the legal opinion about the opinion that we as a committee have got? We've got an opinion. Where's the legal opinion from the department? Not Mr. Ogun Ronby's reading, because he's biased. He's the sponsor of the legislation.
Any other questions?
The person is not a, it's not a question. It's just to align myself with my colleague next to me. You know, unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to go through that opinion. Pumla has let me down. I honestly didn't have an opportunity to go through that opinion. She knows why, because, you know, my car was broken into and the bag was stolen together with those documents without not having read even the first part of the opinion. And I approached her 3 times asking for the documents so that I could read and then so I can contribute in this meeting. Unfortunately, she let me down. But why I align myself with my colleagues who far from that way? You know, I disagree with him when he says this position now is gainsaying what has been said by the senior counsel in his opinion. I also believe this engagement was supposed to be done with the author of the opinion. Really now, so as my colleague has said, you know, he is the presenter now, is challenging everything that has been said in that opinion by the senior counsel. And I think they need an engagement in this thing so that he can also respond to what he is saying. Because as my colleague has said, we don't have their opinion in front of us so that we can compare. More so, as I have said, he needs to respond to this presentation, the senior counsel.
Mama, when you were dead, you are the solitary voice of women here, so you have to. You have an obligation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding, Chair, that we've had input from the senior counsel, and now we're getting a response back from the department and the legal team. Isn't it vested in us then to look at the opinions and the responses that we've received to then take action as from what we have been advised? I'm just raising that issue, sir.
Thank you, Chef. Unfortunately, I find myself in a corner with regards to the presentation by the advisor from the department. Chairperson, simply was, you know, of a challenge in expressing myself as far as Farfetch language is concerned. But if I may address the chairperson in my language. Staro, mangabe echaza mnumzana okunrombi ngo lakuthinta khona iy'ndaba zobuholi bomdabu nesakhiwo sobuholi bomdabu. Ngicabanga ukuthi iphuzu leli elikala khona ngaphambilini ukuthi kufana ngabe indlu ye-National House yalinikezwa ithuba ukuthi iphawule ngalokhu. Uma ngabe-ke kwedluleka kuchazeke kuthinta la khona ahlukanisa khona ubuholi nesakhiwo sobuholi ekugcine umuntu ufika kaxaka khona ukuthi kuhlukana kanjani ngoba asikho isakhiwo esingenayo enhloko yaso. Ngizizwa-ke ngixakeka nxa ngabe echaza ngohlobo achaza ngalo ngoba ngokuqonda kwami
ukulawula kwendawo zobuholi bomdabu akwefani nokwendawo zomasipala. Lakuhlukana khona chairperson indawo umasipala uma ngabe ukuthi asekho qonda nawo umnikazi ngokusobala ebuyela kumasipala ebuyela kuhulumeni, kanti endawo zomdabu uma ngabe indawo isiphumile esandleni sala kwaba kade bebabelwe yona seyihlamba bathuthile bahamba endaweni noma babhubhile kulowo muzi, leyo ndawo iqhubeka iyabelwa noma ubani omunye ofikayo esizweni ozokwakha. So ngizizwa nje ke ngixaxake ngalapho chairperson, umbono wami lo. Thank you.
Uyatolika ndiyafuna utolika ngokwenu. No, the go ahead please.
Thank you, Chair. As I understood the Honorable Member, what he's saying is that in terms of the presentation made by Mr. Okunrumbi, he is concerned that he is trying to separate the traditional council with the traditional leadership, because there is no traditional council without traditional leadership. And also the fact that... sorry, Mr. Okunrumbi, I'm just relating what he said. yes, Chairperson. And also then he says, even when a member of the community has to go or maybe is deceased, then another member comes in and takes place that place of that member that has left the community. So, in other words, whatever happens in that traditional council then continues to be in the hands of the traditional council. And further that, I think that the way that municipalities operate and the way that traditional councils operate are separate and could not be compared with each other. That was my understanding.
Thank you very much. Seje yime emafakini mfana ndibagqibe bonke ngakho mntu ungathethanga ndizambuyela nomama ungonye mabili izajeje ndizoxoshwa emsebenzini kuze bakufakwa indoda engathethiyo ehlanganisweni iyawufinca umvuzo wayo izajeje
Thanks, Chair. The other issue that perturbs me a bit about the way we've dealt with this opinion and the amount of time and effort we've put into this legislation, and I'm not saying we've put in more than the principal sponsor because it's a decade old, is that we don't have the benefit of his opinion in writing. Now, it's very difficult. His questions just about everything from one paragraph to the end about this opinion, but there's nothing in writing. There's nothing for me to compare. There's nothing for us to take and say to the advocate who's representing us, look, this is the opinion of the department. So why do we not have the benefit of seeing what he's presented to us very eloquently on paper?
There's only one thing that he considered on the views of the opinion of the senior council is the issue of the powers of inspectors. He did concede that one. But the rest, he maintains his argument to be consistent with what should be done. We can give you an opportunity to respond. Because in all democracies you must respond. You must be given a right to respond. Where's this document you are reading from? iPad. You remember Ms. Jensen, eh? Please. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
certainly make this available. We do take seriously the comments of members, and with respect, we have not attempted to say that. We've only said we did not want to make it to sound defensive, but maybe it then appears so. But we will, if the committee is fine with it, I don't know if my colleagues from the State Advisory Office would then agree that we will not mind engagement with the senior counsel who wrote the opinion. We would certainly love to present our views to him. At the same time, we'll present to you, to the committee. I think on the, I don't know whether I've misrepresented myself on the question of national or traditional leaders. I think we're actually saying what the Honourable Member has said, that we do not see the distinction between what is the Structures Act and the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, even though traditional council is used in one and traditional leadership is used in another one, but we do a combined reading to achieve an harmony in that reading. Yeah, we would rather make this opinion available for the committee to then consider and decide the parameters within which but maybe if I may, Chair, there were other issues, of course, when I started the presentation, which I did not address, which Honourable Trolley then raised, about the question of exemptions, for instance. Chair, quickly, on the question of exemptions that Council attempted to raise, Chair, if we look at the Maxand judgment, what went to court in Maxand was where mining applications were brought in terms of the legislation responsible, approvals were received, and attempts were made to start mining operations without seeking approvals from municipalities. The court said, no. You get your mining approval, you still need approval from a municipality. We as a department, I think the policy position, we've been very reluctant to then say that exemptions are the way, because so many exemptions will then be granted that we may be found wanting in terms of saying that we've then whittled down the powers of municipality as to remove from their competence what the court, the Constitutional Court said is there. But what we have said is that in limited, very limited cases, matters which are of national interest, based on predefined criteria, may be exempted, but still that application must go to a municipality. Hence, see when we said we're still going to do more work and we've attempted to strengthen the provisions of the bill relating to national interest. So we have not exclusively said mining should go off or protection of agricultural land should go off, but the potential, if they then satisfy further criteria to be developed, then we can exempt those things. Yeah, on the question of processing this bill through the National House of Traditional Leaders, in terms of Section 18 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, I think it's important for us to make a distinction between what Section 18 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act prescribes and what actually obtained in respect of this bill. Yeah, Section 18 of the Framework Act prescribes a mandatory process if certain conditions exist. The opinion of the civil advisors and the parliamentary legal advisors was that this bill is not one of those that mandatory provisions should apply to. It has not been the department saying that it is confirmed by the opinions of both the state advisor and their parliamentary legal advisors. This notwithstanding, we can confirm, Chair, that we've had several engagements with the National House. We have ourselves presented. Indeed, we reported earlier at the beginning of these discussions with the committee that in 2008 we sponsored a very large gathering of traditional leaders where certain agreements were reached in terms of the bill. So we're just saying that there is a process which is mandatory. Even though the opinion says that it is not mandatory, we have on our own taken it on ourselves to ensure that we take along the institution of traditional leaders in respect of that. So the question of Section 18, we are absolutely in the hands of the law advisors and as to what the final position is. Chair, on the transitional arrangements in the bill, I must say we will be able to look at it again to see if it is, but we think that the opinion was predicated on the assumption, and we also brought the bill in the hope that the bill was going to be passed before the 17th of June 2012. So the opinion proceeded as if the situation before 17th of June 2012, when the 24 months the Constitution gave us was existing, the opinion proceeded as if it was still existing.
been the bridge between the bill and the post DFA chapter 5 and 6 situation. So we think those are issues that we can clarify with ease, but we'll still look at the transitional provisions to ensure that there are no unintended consequences. But you may recall that in the A list that we did, we actually proposed certain further amendments to the transitional measures in terms of the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Goskaku. Kosiam, na follow up. One L and Gos. All right. She would? All right. Okay. Let's go to the state law advisors. Oh, maybe we should take up your issue because it's just been spoken about. Go ahead. We're getting parliamentary advisory opinion on the opinion.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with the issue regarding the National House of Traditional Leaders. Chairperson, in terms of Section 18.1 of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Act, any bill that pertains to customs or any tradition, bill that pertains to the customary law or the customs of any traditional community must be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders. Chairperson, counsel gives a different opinion where he says that as there is provision in the bill that relates to traditions or customs, and therefore the bill should be referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders. I respectfully disagree with this view. My opinion is that in terms of the Constitution, municipal planning is specifically allocated as a local government competency. Traditional leaders do not have any power apart from the Constitution, so you cannot have a conflict where traditional leaders have powers which the Constitution specifically allocates for local government. Therefore, as stands our opinion that the bill does not pertain to traditions and customs of traditional communities. The bill deals with municipal, spatial land planning and land use management, which is specifically allocated to local government. And there are other powers allocated to provinces and national government, and it does not pertain to custom. Therefore, it is our opinion that the bill should not be referred to the House of Traditional Leaders. However, considering that there is two conflicting opinions, we are not adverse to the committee making a decision that in its own opinion that the bill should be referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders. In terms of the issue of public participation or the participation specifically of the National House, it's basically for them to comment, and it's for the committee to make a decision as to whether the comments have any merit. So it's not going to in any way force us to accept their comments. The one issue is that it must be referred before the bill is passed by the House at which the bill is being introduced, and a time frame of 30 days must be given to them to respond. So those are the two issues that the committee must consider. However, they do not need to take the whole 30 days to respond. They have a period up to 30 days from the referral to respond to the bill.
Thank you very much. Any further question? Honourable members? Fako.
Is that the only part of the opinion that the state law advisors or parliamentary law advisors believe that they have a difference of opinion on?
Sherry, you want me to continue?
No, let's okay, I'll give you the opportunity to do so. Let me just take other questions. There being no further questions, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we also have an opinion regarding to the issue of Section 44(2) legislation. Chair, our office is of the opinion that there is merit in counsel's arguments regarding Section 44(2) and Section 55(7). When on our reading of the opinion and the state law advisor's opinion and with regard to the constitutional court cases, it is clear that the court protects the powers of local government, and any override provisions are very strictly applied. So counsel has given us certain examples where, in terms of Section 44(2), any override must be necessary and must meet the requirements of Section 44(2). However, in the bill, there is this issue where we create a particular standard. For example, he quotes section or clause 10(2) of the bill, which says provincial legislation not inconsistent with the provisions of the Act may provide for structures and procedures different from those provided for the Act in respect of a province. So we are creating an entire framework in which the provinces and also local government must stick to, but then we're giving them an alternative which nullifies the entire framework that we've created. So we do believe there is merit in the opinion that we are creating two processes, and in terms of meeting the requirement of Section 44 too, this must not, may not necessarily be necessary because we're giving them options with, in that respect. So we do believe that we need further engagement with council as to how the specific provisions of the bill should be amended to ensure that it does fall into Section 44 too. Chair, with regard to the other issue of the inspectors, we also agree with the council's opinion. We are persuaded by its argument in that the powers given to inspectors in respect to, of search and seizure is very broad. When we look at the powers given to police, they are curtailed. The police can only search and seize a property within the limits of the Criminal Procedure Act, and they must do so with a search warrant, and there's only, they're only allowed to see, search and seize property without a search warrant if there's a reasonable suspicion of an offence. So the powers of the police are limited and fall in line with Section 14 of the Constitution. However, the powers of the inspector does not have such limitations, and we believe that there needs to be a relook of the section in terms of the Constitution, and especially in light of the opinion provided by counsel. With regard to other issues of the exclusion of mining and agriculture, we also agree with council that it is a policy consideration, and this is something that the committee must decide. It's really not a legal issue as to whether the committee wants to exclude mining and agriculture from the ambit of the legislation. Chairperson, those are the main issues that we've dealt with.
Yes, sir. Sabule, can we now go to the state law advisors?
Thank you, sir.
Every member has got a copy of what she's going to read. Yeah, the one that is the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on top. It's not inside, it's on top. Lady, ma'am?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
We have to apply the same rule. Eh? You can't take an hour reading the opinion. So let's agree that you have 20 minutes. It's written down so members will be able to follow you. Just explain the key principles and the solution, ma'am. And the solution. Are you ready, members? Go ahead, ma'am. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir.
Sunday, can you organize that your copy be printed so that the members can get it today? You can send somebody to go and print it. Not unless you can't part with your iPad, and in that case maybe you could go and do it yourself. Or email it to somebody who can print it and bring it there. Please. What do you need to possess? The flesh is a virus. I don't care. But why are you chairing the meeting? Judith. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first apologize to members for not having the copy of the opinion, but the opinion was on MS to Pumla on Friday, as we promised. I got it. Thank you. What we have done in dealing with the opinion of the council is that we haven't gone clause by clause. What we've done is grouped the inputs in as far as the legal issues that we identified as per the opinion. So, for example, in our opinion, we have to deal with competencies and the problems that were identified by the council, or that the level of intervention in many of the provisions of the bill, they are found in chapters 2 and 4 and 6 of the bill. They go beyond what the national government is permitted to do. And therefore, these provisions are not supportive of the requirements of Section 1544. In our response, that chapters 2 and 4 of the bill do provide for the statutory framework which is applicable to the three spheres of government. And in Chapter 2, the bill provides for the minister to prescribe the norms and standards for land use management and land development, which amongst other things, it reflects the national policy and the national policy priorities and programs. The norms and standards, therefore, must promote social inclusion, spatial equity desirable in settlement patterns. We have also went on to analyze that Chapter 6 of the bill provides that although the municipalities are authorities of assistance and land development applications, where any other legislation requires an authorization for a related land use, such authorization must be obtained in terms of that legislation. Therefore, in our view, this is covered in Section 42 of the Constitution, which vests the powers to Parliament as legislative authority of the national sphere of government as set out in Section 44 of the Constitution. We go on to analyze what Section 44 provides. I won't do that in detail. But more important, as raised by the Council, is Section 44.2, which empowers Parliament to intervene by passing legislation in accordance with Section 76.1 with regard to the matters falling within a functional area listed in Schedule 5, where in necessary in terms of the listed circumstances. It's our view that both the national and provincial governments have the legislative and executive authority to ensure the effective performance by the municipalities, as listed in Part B of Schedule 4 and Part B of Schedule 5. Also, in terms of the Constitution, the government is constituted of national, provincial, and local spheres of government, and those spheres of government will always be distinctive, interdependent, and interrelated. Therefore, in those cases, it will not be easy to draw hardcore boundaries in as far as which one is interfering with each other, except for the interpretation of the constitutional principles which are stated for this purpose. The bill provides a general statutory framework which is applicable to all the three spheres of government with regard to the development planning. And of importance in this regard is the municipal planning, as referred to in Part B of Schedule 4 of the Constitution. We have based our opinion on the case of the City of Johannesburg Metropolitan Council, which the Constitutional Court considered where the meaning of municipal planning is. And the Court observed that the term is not defined in the Constitution. The Court found that the planning in the context of municipal affairs is a term which has assumed a particular, well-established meaning, which includes the zoning of land and the establishment of township. Therefore, the court pointed out that in that context, the term is commonly used to define the control and regulation of land. Therefore, in the issue of the bill affecting the competencies, it is our view that the bill does observe these competencies of the three spheres of government by providing the framework in the national legislation relating to spatial planning, land use, and land development for the whole republic. Furthermore, clause 2 of the bill provides that the act applies to the entire republic and it is legislation enacted in terms of section 155.7 of the Constitution and 44.2. Therefore, the bill sets out a system of spatial planning for the whole country. As we have already discussed, that the greater part of the opinion of the Council is based on the interpretation of Section 44.2, we further note that the bill provides that the overall direction in clause 10 as to how the planning this should occur. But clause 10 to specifically allows each province to institute different measures within overall scheme of clause 10, because it may be necessary to respond differently to customary and cultural practices in each province. Thus, the provincial context is provided for, while there is also consistent overall regulation of the provincial support and monitoring. Therefore, all provinces must comply with clause 10, but in a manner which takes the provincial context into account, which is a kind of a differentiation. Therefore, we are still of the view that the bill is necessary in terms of Section 44.2 of the Constitution. Then the Council's opinion also tackled the issue of intergovernmental relations and cooperative governance. Under the point that even though the minister must consult with other organs of state in terms of clause 9 of the bill, this clause makes the minister to be the final arbiter of the procedures required to resolve and prevent conflicts and inconsistencies. Therefore, the minister is left with unfettered discretion as to how to resolve the conflicts and inconsistencies. In our response, we are told that clause 9 of the bill states that the minister may, after consultation with the organs of state in the provincial and local tier of government, prescribe procedures to resolve and prevent conflicts or inconsistencies that may emerge from spatial plans, frameworks, and policies of different spheres of government, and between the spatial plan, framework, policies relating to or other organs of state. Clause 10 provides for the provinces to pass legislation which is consistent with the bill and the Intergovernmental Framework Relations Framework Act of 2005 to provide for matters listed in Schedule 1 of the bill. The provincial legislation may also provide for matters of provincial interest, remedial measures in the event of inability or failure of a municipality to comply with the obligations and matters not specifically dealt with in the bill. And in our opinion, we outline the provisions of Section 411 of the Constitution, which contains the principles of cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations. In our view, the principles of cooperative governance set out in Section 411 of the Constitution, which are concerned with the manner in which the spheres of government and organs of state must relate to each other, are binding to all spheres of government, and we are still of the view that the bill takes in account Section 411 of the Constitution and the Intergovernmental Relations Act. And then another issue raised by the Senior Counsel is the issue relating to property rights. We consider the views of the Counsel that in terms of Section of Clause 7A, 6 of the bill, a municipal planning tribunal is not entitled to consider the diminution in the value of land or property in taking a decision, and that is, this is irrational according to the Senior Counsel to afford a person with a pecuniary proprietary interest which may be adversely affected by such a decision a right to appeal in terms of Section 51.1. In our response, we have considered that in Clause 7A6 provides that a municipal planning tribunal considering this application may not be impeded by the or irrestricted by the in the exercise of its discretion on the ground that the value of the property is affected. And we have furthermore looked at that Clause 57 provides that without derogating from the provisions of any law governing compensation for expropriation, an exercise of a power or a performance of a function in terms of the bill may not be impeded or stopped solely on the basis of the value. We have considered this clause in light of the First National Bank case, where the Constitutional Court held that the overriding purpose of a property clause is to strike a balance between the protection of existing property rights and the promotion of public interest, mainly in the sphere of land reform, but not limited thereto. And it's also a striking of a proportionate balance between these two functions. In this regard, we still maintain the view that since the bill seeks to address the past imbalances regarding the spatial planning and land use management, it becomes necessary to ensure that no undue impediments are raised to frustrate the issue of land reform. Therefore, in our view, the clauses may not lead to irrational decision making.
He was suggesting that the clauses that he is critical of must remain as they are because they are correct. Is that what you, your conclusions seem to be saying?
We give our conclusions per clause, Chair, but at the end of our opinion, we have our main conclusion. We suggest that we're not saying that this cannot change. We're stating the motivation behind why these issues are they are when the bill was taken to Parliament. But we're still open to any suggestion. If the committee would instruct us they need a redraft, it is fine. We're still opening the policy decision to the full committee. But in our view, legally, we do not see any challenge. Legally, constitutionally, but from a drafting level, language-wise,
with open to any proposal. For the... Can you read the part of what you just said? Therefore, this section is as it is, therefore there's no need for anything changes. Or shall we read from what you're saying that all everything here is on that basis?
Yes, Chair, I would request the committee to read it on is that everything we say here is on that basis. We do not see a constitutional challenge, but we are open to the improving of the language of the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, you have heard. The here is now an opinion. This is a legal opinion on the opinion given to us by senior counsel. Any comments? You see, honourable members, our obligation to Parliament is to apply our minds to all the issues raised, so that when we submit this bill to the House, we've looked at all angles that may create problems for the bill, which means that we are offering the nation the best bill possible. That's what we intend doing. That is what we have been doing all along. So that's why I insist that members should comment on this and give us a view before we conclude. Because if we rush through it, and then many other people discover all these flaws, we have a problem. You would know, lawyers would go and argue in court even though they think you have a flimsy case. It's not only because they have the money, or you have the money, but because they want to prove in court that there is another side to the story. That's why I want to make sure that we look at all sides of the story.
There's nothing that I can comment on, but I should say
something. I find responsibility. So abani na wabata desprimo soba. Ifile lendo lego dizi apil. So ba itale ba uswelegi lewe ni wate. Yo! Nika ni mwa binje ni wate. Wamidada ba mla shekrivin. Wabani ba abuza. Kuten nendo ni la ishwe mkulo wenu ekrivin. Kubesa explainer. Uti ena kwa ipa pendu. Upenda lumtu buza. emathuni yawulibazi zima uhamba umngcwabo lo mntu usekriveni futhi mawuhamba umngcwabo. There is absolutely no way we can treat the bill like that. It is going to be an offense to the nation for this committee to treat the bill like mawuhamba umngcwabo. We have to make sure that we do a good job. Kosiya, uyekile uthethe. Unawo mawuhamba umngcwabo. Okay. Mamungwane.
It is good that they give us their opinion, and then we'll have time to sit down, we compare, and then we may also take this to the Senate Council to have these comments as well. Because we already engaged services of the Senate Council in this thing, because they have said we want to, you know, to produce the best bill which will emanate to being the act of this country. So eventually I believe we have to take these things to him as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Fako. Thank you, man. We have had the state law advice who's suggesting that they because of the argument is both in language and in law, they find it difficult to find any fault in law, but they are willing to be persuaded on the language to make sure that it's compatible and consistent with all the other laws. Mr. Ogunrobi did not even suggest that. He was saying no one knew. The bill is correct as it stands. Which gives us nigger in writing, law into his suggestion to Mawab. We need to conclude this meeting as the sponsor of the bill by saying we will facilitate the documents going to the CA Council. We will also facilitate any possibility of the Council talking to you, so that when the final version of the bill goes to the House, everybody has made a contribution in shaping it in the right direction. This nation is very important to us. It has to be served to the best of our ability. Are we agreed? Can we agree, therefore, that Honourable Members, next Wednesday we will get the final version that must go to the House. So we'll tell Senate Council and state law advisors to interact and give us the final version. Because we cannot afford to leave Parliament and allow Parliament to rise without us tabling the final bill. So let's meet here next Wednesday. We will have a copy of the final. There will be no party among the two parties who says I disagree, because they would have been given an opportunity to interact. Are we agreed? Thank you very much. Honourable Members, JJ, you holding your mouth as if you say, I'm tempted to speak, but I'm stopping myself from speaking. You're right, JJ. Thank you very much. All right. That dispenses with the first item on the agenda. We now have to go to the second item. Honourable Members, we went to Arabella, nice coastal resort next to next to Plainemont, just short of Hermanas, and we looked at the way we conduct our business as the committee, We also look at the flow of information between ourselves and the department and how we handle that. We also looked at our own capacity as the committee to perform our function to the best of our ability. And we looked at the way we can influence the department to change the course it is taking so that it is able, or shall I say she instead of it, the department, instead of it, I can rather say she. It, okay. So that the department can do three things. We looked at not only changing course in terms of priorities, but also changing course in terms of what the mandate of this government dictates to the department. Second thing, we looked at the ability of the department to see the bigger picture in rural development, shall I say, in the rural economy. We were also convinced by the oversight visits we performed to Northern Cape, Free State, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, and so on. We did those. We then looked at the recommendations that we have tabled on those matters, and we came to a conclusion that there's a general weakness in the ability of the department to strengthen the capacity of communities that are benefiting from land reform and all other pieces of land that allow them. Not only just the capacity for purposes of training and finances, but also in terms of communication. So we then concluded that we will then produce a document that will then guide us to achieve that objective. So we have now a draft report here in front of you. I was called this morning by somebody from the department who's suggesting that we are asking them to analyze our strategic plan. We didn't ask you to do that. Don't even try and do that. We asked you to look at our report and our strategic plan. And if you want to comment, you can comment, but we gave you, this is how we will conduct our business from now on. So it is on page, from page 34 to page, to page 34 to 39. That is our strategic plan. The draft report tells us what we tells everybody what we considered that led us to come to that conclusion. And we are putting this to the members. We gave the members 2 weeks, Pumla? 2 weeks to look at the document and come back with comments about whether this is the correct route. Maybe we misread the mandate given to the management committee on what is the nature and structure of the strategic plan. Thank you. I put to the House the draft strategic plan.
Just raise your hand. Then we move.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, it's unfortunate I was not touched, but I did go through the thread plan. What I've noticed is only some of the dates that we have set here in the strat plans that they are outdated. I don't know whether we'll be able to to put new dates, forward dates, because other activities, you know, we won't be able to check if we don't check these dates, as most of them are outdated. But the issues mentioned on the plan, if you just go through them, I think they're pertinent. All of them are our responsibility as this committee. But I was just trying to check the issue of the quarterly report, because we were wearing four eyes, Chair. I don't know, but I've just noted something about my quarterly report. Thanks, Chair. Because I noted something about the quarterly report and also this in-year monitoring, do we call it? Whether the spending, the quarterly spending trend of the department. So I'm saying, Chair, I don't know whether if they are in, my apology. If they are not in, I think we need to consider that.
In-year monitoring and quarterly reports, I think it's the same, one and the same thing for us as a committee. It may not be one and the same thing for the department, but for us, when we receive the quarterly report, it tells us the trend of their performance as they proceed with the year.
So I think in one of the meetings you raised the issue that the department is reporting on their financial performance. It's always reporting on their financial performance to the appropriation, but not to us as a committee, which is very much crucial. Because while we monitor their performance quarterly, we also need to monitor their financial performance.
Because we've got a report to have circulated. They have done that. In fact, they recognize the point we made. Remember, based on the annual report, there is a disjuncture between the expenditure and the actual performance. So they themselves admit that they must marry the two so that they walk hand in hand as they proceed in the year. All we have to do, Tina, as a portfolio committee, is to monitor that, the achievement of that and so on. For instance, already in the quarter that they are reporting on, there are programs that are lagging behind in the expenditure, and we have to interrogate those programs because they are dragging down performance of other programs. But yes, Mamungwenya, that is correct. Fagu?
Chair, I don't know how you want to deal with this draft report, because before we actually get to the strategic plan, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in that report, and I couldn't help thinking when I was reading this document that those of us that were there certainly benefited through our ears. But then when you read the document, there's some really substantial stuff in this document that goes to the nub of what we have to do here. It identifies challenges, it identifies areas of weakness, it identifies our objectives as a committee, and it's a really worthwhile document. I mean, I started going through it with a pink highlighter, and the document ended up being pink. And I don't know when you propose...
I hope pink is not having any other meaning.
Yeah, I was a councillor in Amatole District Municipality, and confidential documents were put on pink paper. This is not a confidential document. It's actually something that we as a committee can be really proud of. But there are a lot of issues, Chair.
We could easily.
And the members that missed it have now got the benefit of that weekend if they would just read it, because there's good stuff in here.
You started by asking the question about why don't we agree that the purpose of giving members means to read was that they must read. And today we have to adopt a version for who had before last.
Doctor, we'll use, after amending the dates, we'll use it to guide our own performance.
Chair, I would support that, and I would like to start by saying that the contents of all the presentations made and the document itself is a very, very good document. I'd like to make a few comments, if I could, Chair. On page 5, the first paragraph on page 5 is a very important issue that we as a committee will have to look at deeply, and so will the department. The lack of capacity to deal with the department's own program of legislation that has been one of the major weaknesses, especially in view of the absence of legislation for land tenure security in former Bantu stands. And that is something that's been dealt with in the National Development Plan. It's something that gets spoken all around by everybody in government. But we, as a Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, are not talking about land tenure reform in former Bantu stands. That's the first issue, Chair. The next issue is that on page 8, we talk about the role of the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in assessing outcomes-based delivery of the department. Now, I want to just say, Chair, that I was frankly disappointed in the annual report process where the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation came and told us that their evaluation of this department is based on the self-assessment by the department. Now, that will never be. It will never construe outcomes-based evaluation. So there is a huge weakness with regards to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation's outcomes-based evaluation process. Chair, then on page 13, Chair, the top section of bullets, I want to draw your attention to the last bullet at the top where it says, targeting a broader range of land redistribution beneficiaries to include more farm dwellers and communal area populations. Chair, we've spoken at length about appropriate identification of beneficiaries to make land reform work. And I think we, with the department, need to spend a lot more effort in developing mechanisms to identify appropriate beneficiaries of land reform. And farm dwellers must most certainly be considered more seriously in that regard. And then the second paragraph that says the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform awaits the outcomes of an interministerial commission or committee on restitution issues. Now, we need that interministerial document, Chair, on restitution commission, on restitution, because our restitution is just not getting concluded, and the backlogs are being whittled away slowly, but far too slowly. On page 14, Chair, we talk there that, in the top paragraphs, that critical issues are the policy proposals for production discipline and employment creation. The overall of land reform policy should continue to the reversal of the structural marginalization of rural areas and increase employment opportunities. Chair, increasing employment opportunities in agriculture is not something you can do by decree. It's something you do by creating an environment where you can stimulate employment in agriculture. We're going through a difficult period right now with some strikes in the agricultural community, but that's not the only challenge. It's the environment that the state should be creating or contributing to create where we can create jobs in rural communities, Chair. Chair, on page 16, we talk about assumptions for successful rural development. Now, it talks about a successful program of rural development and agriculture is based on the assumption that all appropriate policy frameworks are in place. That is land reform, land rights, effective state support, and buying from industry. Now, we must look at that paragraph, because that paragraph is, it goes to this chair, it goes to this document that you did in 2009, this committee. These are the issues in this framework that talk to that paragraph, and they don't exist. These issues have not been addressed since 2009, when this document was first drawn up, before I even got to this committee. Chair, on page 17, there's something that really perturbs me in that second last paragraph, and it says, it talks about district committees. Also identify communal land that may be suitable for irrigation expansion, and it negotiates appropriate forms of secured tenure with traditional authorities and other stakeholders. Well, security of tenure is not something that's negotiated. What is negotiated is potential beneficiaries, but security of tenure is something that is determined by law, and we mustn't be under any illusion about that, Chair. And then lastly, Chairperson, on page 25, we're dealing with the Ngonyama Trust there, and it talks about indigenous law shall be subject to the regulation by law. And then it says, however, some of the changes included in the termination of the functions of magistrates and land administration, allocation and informal registration of PTOs leave no alternative to customary communal tenure system. Although the upgrading of Land Tenure Rights Act 112/91 was in place, it was not applied in many parts of the former Bantustans. The Interim Protection of Informal Land Rights Act 31/1996 has remained an interim legislation and continues to be renewed annually to ensure protection of weak and insecure tenure rights and interest in land until a new policy and statutory framework is in place. Chair, I conclude with that last observation because it goes to the very first point that I made about the NDP and our own observations about insecure tenure of people living in the former Bantustans. And Chair, those are just some of the issues that I thought were extremely important to determine what our real objective is as a committee. And just reading those documents again really crystallized a lot of things in my mind and made me realize that our land reform will continue to limp along unless we address these.
Thank you, Chair. These are the comments on the document that we have produced to guide ourselves. These are the spectacles that we are going to use or wear to look at yourself and what you do. If you want to make a comment, you can do so. But I'm expecting the members to agree that you adopt this set of spectacles and use them to watch. I'm not talking about that other guy who's offering people beer on TV. He says, remember, I'm watching you.
No, I think, Chair, we appreciate also the document, and I think for those of us who are from the department, were part of that weekend, it was quite a useful weekend for us as well, especially because we are really in a state of serious policy development within the department. And I appreciate that many of the concerns even raised by Honourable Trollope are the same issues that we ourselves are trying to make sure we address before this year ends, so that when we start even the new financial year, we start with a number of these policies already in place. And obviously a number of the green paper policies have been moving ahead at sufficient speed right now, including, I think you would have noticed, the recent Office of the Valuer General, which has now been approved, and our intention then to ensure some of the other ones, including the Land Management Commission, etc., are taken back before you close for this year. In terms of the calendar year. But I'm going to, if you give me an opportunity, Chair, just also ask perhaps Hilton, who leads our policy team, to just make one or two comments as well in terms of some of the detail, if you give us a few minutes. Thanks.
Thanks very much. I would concur with the Acting Director General that indeed the document, as well as with the Honourable Member, that the document is a reflection of what was raised and what was discussed over the days, and we had a robust discussion there. Some of us had the opportunity to be there. Just a few things that may need to be clarified, although they do not have any substantive change to the strategic plan. and as the acting DG has said, this has to be under some of the comments or the background to the plan has to be also understood in terms of the broader policy review, comprehensive policy review process that's taking place in the department. One point that's being raised somewhere, particularly by the doctor from the Law Gender Society, some in the document is the extent of public participation. We have over participated in the process, in my humble observation. As recently as the last 3 weeks, we've been able to have consultations with the CPAs. CPAs are referred here in all the nine provinces, and a national conference on Friday and Saturday to come to the nub of some of the challenges to unlock the land that is held and the energy that is embodied within those communities, and consider the options of bringing that land into productive use. Another point that's raised is the emphasis of a statement made in the Green Paper that communal land tenure will be dealt with separately. Obviously, the public responses we received on the Green Paper, amongst others, emphasize the challenge of that why should we deal with it separately? And as a department, we reciprocated and responded. And indeed, over the period of time of the establishment of the work stream, there's been robust debates and engagements in a dedicated work stream related to communal land tenure. And trying to think out of the box, out of some of the implicit framing of the questions being raised here, and saying what is the future, what are the developmental implications for this land area that is being identified. This particular discussion has been incorporated into a framework document on rural rural policy framework, wherein we're looking at these areas as a key focal part. So there is information in that particular regard, and indeed it was a response from the prior side of the department from concerns raised by the public that this is a critical issue, and why is the Green Paper suggesting that it's going to be addressed separately. There are a number of questions on restitution, on tenure, on beneficiary selection, etc., that are raised. We have come with a written response to those. I won't go into the detail, except highlight the issues. This is a discussion amongst the members. We have come with a written response on the various questions. And once again, the questions that were raised then and the issues that have developed so far should be understood in the context of this continuous engagement in terms of the policies of land reform. In the body of the document and in other forums as well, there's certain concepts, Chairperson, that we will also need to clarify amongst ourselves as partners in this program, implementers and the oversight role. It's the concept of the agrarian class and the agrarian strategy, which is also referred to by the drafters of the document, that creating an agrarian class is a non-starter. We could agree with that, but I mean, if you're in a rural context, kuna mazelo, kuna inkomo, kuna mapii, kuna mhlaba, any rational attempt to regenerate that economy should start with that resource. It doesn't mean it ends there. The NDP has indicated that there's opportunities in mining, there's on-farm and off-farm. So really, it's the strategy which we talk about, the agrarian strategy rather than creating an agrarian class, which in itself is an area of debate as well. But I think we emphasize the agrarian strategy of changing the fundamental change of relations to land, livestock, cropping and community, which is the essential basis for economic regeneration in a rural context, one may argue. The other contentious area which we are going to be facing going forward, and also based on international experience of what's happening in some countries like Mozambique, Ghana,
There's a reference, there's a continuous reference of, and with respect, customary tenure being fluid and unwritten. And it's not problematized. It's mentioned in passing in the document, but it's I've also heard it in the consultations around the bill, the traditional courts bill. Is that an ideal state? Our constitution refers to customary law, traditional authorities, etc. In other countries, they have tried to document what the law is. Will we be able to resolve and reach a balance between customary law and the prescriptions of the constitution if it just remained fluid and unregistered? I'm not so sure. One's view is a bit different. And as I say that, Chairperson, the questions are answered in this. Some of the questions being raised in the various sections, but they will need to be understood in terms of the ongoing transformation happening in the department. In terms of dealing with some of the questions, like the numbers of claims, dealing with some of the questions like resolving and coming with a model to resolve the communal tenure issue, dealing with the questions of farm workers and farm dwellers and rights to be conferred. And in respect to that too, how do we think beyond the spaces to a regional approach? Because really many of the challenges that we are faced in the conflicts are the limitations of land. So a solution that just looks at the rights without saying how do we develop the area broadly and cater for the various interests and the various needs is a long term and a more sustained one, whilst indeed acknowledging the challenges of eviction that need to be dealt with, and finding social solutions to social problems as we are trying to do through these the recommendations being developed on these two pieces of legislation. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
But the summary of what you have said is that you are going to write a written response to a document and engage on the issues. That's what he did. Thank you very much for your comments. Honourable members, we stand to adopt the strategy. Agreed? Thank you very much. There's no dissenting view on this. What we need to do is to revise the deadlines or the time frames and put it in the form of a program of the committee so that we pursue it. And these themes that we have in the document should be guided by that program. You see, because I'm scared, Hildy, that you guys are advising the minister on whether it is possible to have a final agrarian strategy with all the components of the issues raised in this document. And if he adopts a view that says, yes, it is not possible, but for now, let us take it on a piecemeal basis, step by step, we may have an end result. Ms. Kobodo, who could remember year 2000, and yes, Ms. Kobodo was in 2000, there was a huge conference in South Africa which adopted a view that says we must create a new person, a new different person in South Africa who pursues the national interest rather than the individual interest. And the biggest problem with that conclusion was that it was then dealt with as a piecemeal thing, one by one. And the product, because unintended consequences that as a result, you started a lot of a rounded citizen is not a citizen who understands only parts of what the national interest is. A rounded citizen must see the total responsibility of a citizen towards his own country. So, Hilton, the point here is that please go back and review your view about whether agrarian strategy is possible in the medium term or not, so that you then can take a parallel process, the one that is short term, the other one which is medium to long term, so that whilst we are implementing certain aspects of that agrarian strategy, but the overall development of the agrarian strategy itself has to evolve, so that you have time frames by when we think we'll have completed our agrarian strategy as a department. Remember that you are the only department of our government that is charged with that responsibility. Even agriculture does not have the strategy, the responsibility you do. They have to follow you because they are plugging in a particular aspect of your responsibility. Remember, you deal with your social issues. You're dealing with understanding, almost like doing surveys in particular communities and coming up with solutions after identifying skill gaps. And the agriculture department doesn't do that. They just deal with the farmer, whether emerging or not, and deal with the agriculture in that context. So you have had that responsibility, and we, writing this document, we're doing so under the understanding that this is the line we are going to pursue in engaging NINA. So if you think that we were robust in this plan process, wait and see when we implement our strategy. And some of you I know, you already don't want to come here because every time you come here, we give you more work. But let's go on to the next item. I thought I should make that point, Honorable DG. Now we deal with the minutes. We have circulated all the sets of minutes like FAGO has done. We need to get people who have read the minutes to come to us and say set number so and so and set number so and so. This is what I find to be problematic. I want the amendment of this part. I put the first set, which is should be the, no, we don't have the nine. Where? Not yet. I don't have, I've got the 10, I've got the 17, I've got the 31, I didn't have the, okay. I put the set of the 9. Anybody have read it? Okay. Mr. is saying something else. I accept your point. Ma'am.
Yes, the Gelache accept to correct 3.1.5. This report instead of reported. And also under the conclusion,
which reported was not requested. And what?
And number 5, under conclusion 5.1, for consideration. Second in shape.
Not to consideration, but for consideration. Yes. Is that coming? Come in. Can we adopt as amended? Thank you. Thank you, JJ. Seconded. We have now the set of the 10.
Overuse, because there were lots of consultants that were
were used, then the other one, Chair, when I read 3.2.2, it was not, I don't know whether I was tired or I was confused. It was not clear to me, especially on the figures. The ITP further presented the financial statement for the year under review. Of the total revenue of 38, our commercial lease royalty revenue and interest on the bank and short-term investment, the ITP spent 37 with regards to the total transfer payment received from the department of 13 million or whatever. So I was not sure whether the 30 million was part of the 38 or just separate.
Thanks. I can clarify that. I think, yeah, there's an omission there from what I'm reading. What that paragraph should have said is to indicate that they would, you know, they get their revenue from two sources. One is out of own funding and another is from transfers.
Yeah.
And split, you know, spending for both. So there's a bit of the last sentence which should indicate from the transfer how much was spent and how much wasn't.
Okay.
I think we'll rectify that.
Okay. Then 4.4, I think also it must be corrected. The committee observed poor communication. If we can just delete that, there is very. Then the last one is on 4.5. In view of the number of strategic partners that have collapsed. I don't know whether the strategic partners that have collapsed or the recap projects that have collapsed. I move for the adoption of the amendment.
Thank you, members. In the absence of the chairperson, I nominate Ms. Ngwenya Mabila to take charge. Thank you.
For the date of the 17th. Is there anybody who has read? Down. Okay, guys, where are you stuck? The bullet points? Can you get the bullet points? So any content? Is it the reflective of, we can correct the numbers.
I was saying I had two sets of minutes for the same date. So which one are we considering? The other one's ending with 2.3, the other one with 2.4. There's only the mistake with the numbers, numbering.
We will deal with that. They are the, exactly the same.
And not.
They are.
Only one.
Ms. Wenyamavir, Funda Ney Pelang Water is Lady Adjournment. They won? What do you
think of them? APA at 2.2, the VRRR comprising both report on both the DRDLR and the Ngonyama Transport.
That's incorrect, right? One,
incorrect.
Yes.
Yeah. So we should ignore that.
Yes.
Thank you. That's what we are trying to say.
But it does right. Just be here. Is that okay? Is when you have it, I'm a nanny who got sorted. The content.
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 17th of October.
Yes, Gosia. Near Vumela. To the 31st of October. Yes, ma'am.
Chair, 31st of October. I think the first thing we have to just look at the spelling for advisor. Somewhere we put O, somewhere we put E. I think it must be corrected.
And goes, ma'am.
And the other one, the must correct the names of the bills, Municipal Systems Act and Traditional Leadership and Governance. I think it's 2.2.1.
Number two.
Also, if we can rephrase 3.2.
What do we need to do there? To remove, to discuss the way forward and write the to caucus. Which way do you want it? That is what we did. We caucused the way forward. What do you want changed there?
No, we caucus chair, but in common which we need to rephrase.
Kanja.
The meeting was suspended for 5 minutes. The department and guests were accused or whatever for the committee to discuss the way, to allow the committee to discuss the way forward. But when reading the sentence now, read, the meeting was suspended for 5 minutes to allow the committee, excluding, it doesn't, there's no alignment of the sentences, but English is English, Chair.
I think that comma addresses her concern. The comma after committee. If you read this, it says this meeting was suspended for 5 minutes to allow the committee to discuss the way forward. That is what this meeting says, because that comma is addressing your concern. You know, because this thing was done with exclusion of the department and the guests.
No, I'm not.
This comma addresses what you're saying. The comma after committee and after guests addresses the concern. It excludes the department and the guests in discussing the way forward.
Okay. I put it there.
Yes, go for the adoption, sir.
If I may, to take us back, Mr. Tolo was talking in his response about dealing with extraordinary public participation with regard to CPAs. Chair, one big deficiency in this portfolio, the department and the portfolio, is that the tabling of CPA annual reports, we don't get them and haven't been getting them. And as far as we're concerned, we have no idea what happens with CPAs. So you might have had a meeting with them and you might have had outreach with CPAs, but this committee is supposed to get reports of CPAs, and there are years gone by that we haven't had the reports.
One of the commitments that were made, if I may, Chairperson, is that these issues emanating from these consultations will form the basis for a report to this particular to this committee.
The parliament of such as home tent, we use the law. It's not an arbitrary thing. It's not what Honorable Trollope likes or not. It's about the law. The law is specific. You report to parliament annually. And it does say when. So to prepare to get to a point of producing the report is neither here nor there. What we want to know is when are we getting our report. Mr. Mkwekwe wants to rescue you. Is that Mr. Mkwekwe?
Thank you, Chair. The CPA report is currently being compiled. Because it involves having to interact with provinces with specific CPAs and so on. That process is being undertaken at the moment. As to when the report will be tabled before Parliament, Chair, I'm not aware, but I do know the work is being done.
And also, if that report is currently being compiled, for which year or years is it being compiled?
Because you know, because the summary of what you could have said, Mr. Tolo, is to say we are in the process of complying with the law. We will be ready by such and such a date. So that the year is rule. Suzo was would satisfy the law date. Which year are we reporting on? Is that Mr. Mkwekwe?
Okay, then it could well be that my information is incomplete. The report was compiled for all the years between 1996 and 2011. Let me clarify because I might not
know. Clarify,
Chair, the report is supposed to be submitted to Parliament annually. But that has not happened since 1996. What has happened is that in 2011, a report was compiled going back to all the years, covering all those years. That report was finalized. As to whether it was submitted to Parliament or not, then that's the question now I am unable to answer. But I do know that the report exists. The report that we're currently working on now is covering 2011-2012. So I think maybe the DG must just request the chair to allow us to go back, verify our facts, and come back and report.
Lawyers are trained, you must say as little as possible. You're saying too much.
Can I request, Chair, that we do go back and we present you a formal response? If indeed the reports for the outer years have not been, for the previous years have not been submitted, we will submit that and clarify then the current one that is being worked on. We do acknowledge that it is a legal compliance issue in terms
terms of ensuring that we submit to Parliament. So we do acknowledge that. Thanks, Chair.
Can we, whilst agreeing with that, agree on the processes regarding the broader issues? Thank you, Faku, for raising the question. Ms. Kobodo, we have agreed that you are going to give us. You see, Ms. Kobodo, I'm sure now, Mozambique, we are asking about the law that created the Commission for Restitution and Land Rights of 1994. Stipulated that the commission reports to Parliament. But you changed the arrangement without changing the law. And now you are reporting to the department. We want a report from, like the ITB is doing, from the commission, rather than subsume your report into the departmental report. And that will fix the problem. Now, DG, we want the CPA's report exclusively for the period under question. There's a third report we agreed on. Oh, it's the young man. It's all right. We have the NARISEC report. We're expecting it. And Hilton is going to give us the other report. Four. Okay. Upumla will make a follow-up on the list of those reports that we're expecting. Can we agree when we will get them, DG?
Chair, we've agreed, I think, that we've asked the Commission on the first one of the details of the claims for the two quarters. I think that report we should be able to provide to you before we come to the next meeting. On the other two, once I've gone back to the office, can I confirm with Kumla? So give us 14 days then.
I hope I represented you fairly well in engaging with the department on these matters. But there are four reports we want, one from Hilton, one from the commission, one from CPAs, and the fourth one is that document. No, he knows. Hilton knows that document. We assume. No, so far, Pumz are Palilea Tava, Palilea T. Nazi reporting is final. Committee has phone. All right? Thank you very much. Upumla has made a mistake, honorable members. There's a set of the 24th of October which nearly created that confusion. You remember you have 217. Yeah. Now the one that you were reading at 2.2 Ababini, NOBRR, is supposed to be the 24th of October, not 17. Nagendi Nomla were condemned. What's been done?
If you remember, members, on the 17th, we dealt with the annual report page by page, annual report of the department, and then on the 24th, we adopted our report, the committee report, based on the information gathered from those annual reports, and this is the minutes of that meeting, where we were dealing with our committee report, not the department, where we had recommendations for BRRR.
That meeting, we agreed that that document will be circulated and tabled.
Chairperson, I think we've agreed that to correct the numbers and also delete that on both, on 2.3. Then I move for the adoption of the amendments.
Yeah. The sentence should read, the BRRR comprising both reports on both ASUG of the department and Ingonyama Trust were considered. Kabulela, Ms. Kenya Mabele. As usual, you are sharp. Seconded by... Yes, go, sir.
Second.
Thank you very much. Thank you. In terms of my own program, we now must deal with the adoption of the process to be followed in the processing of the bill, which we just have to adopt the decision that we already adopted. Isn't it? Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Until next Wednesday.